Hello, this is Mike Harvath with this week's Shoot the Moon podcast, broadcasting live and direct from Revenue Rocket World Headquarters in Bloomington, Minnesota. Revenue Rocket is the world's premier M&A and growth strategy advisor for IT services firms. Today with me are my partners Matt Lockhart and Ryan Barnett. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good to be here. Thanks, Mike.
Hey, we're talking about disclosure schedules and how disclosure schedules are an important part of every M&A transaction for tech services companies, and kind of what they are and how they play a role and all that stuff. So I'm going to shape kind of a little bit of background on disclosure schedules, and then we can start, you know, having a dialogue about it. First of all, what is a disclosure schedule? Disclosure schedule is part of a purchase agreement. It has to do with everything that's needed to be disclosed that's essentially called out in that purchase agreement, whether it's an asset purchase or a stock purchase. And it's a really heavy lift for a sales, somebody who's selling their business. And most sellers underestimate the amount of time needed to complete a set of disclosures. And you know, there's a bunch of them that are pretty easy to disclose. Like you might disclose that there's no litigation pending for your business, or, you know, sometimes these are also other disclosures around, you know, have you received notice from a tax authority or not, or whatever. Those are disclosures that you would make. They're also very similar to reps and warrants, which we'll talk about in a later podcast, but other disclosure schedules that are really meaningful involve all of your material contracts with your customers. You need to be able to disclose those and actually attach them to the schedule to be appended to the purchase agreement. Same would be for like any leases you might have for your office or storage facilities or other operating leases that you might have for equipment. Like, you know, whether that be for a printer or, you know, other equipment that you might need to operate in your business or servers, or, you know, there's other agreements that you have with vendors. It even goes all the way to, you know, specific services you get for like internet access, or might include copies of your banking statements from the most recent period or your financials. And so there's a lot of stuff that you need to disclose that you are going to warrant as accurate as part of a purchase agreement. And generally, when you start peeling the onion back on this, it takes several weeks to a month, frankly, to assemble disclosure schedules properly. Most people don't start thinking about it until they get a purchase agreement negotiated. And then this becomes kind of the long pole in the tent to close. So I'll stop there and turn it over to Ryan or Matt for any questions.
Yeah, sure. Let me jump in, Mike. And so when you say any material contract, I mean, how is that defined? What's material?
Yeah, materiality is different in every deal, and it depends. So some buyers might insist on every contract being disclosed, that every contract is considered material. Others might say, well, and this is a real world example from a project we just closed, where they wanted to disclose the contracts that represented 90% of the revenue. And that, you know, in this particular case resulted in about 50 contracts. Additionally, they will oftentimes in the contracts want to know which ones require a consent or a notice so that that appropriate level of consent or notice with that customer can be had.
So actually, the material, the level, the definition of material tends to be a negotiation point between the buyer and the seller. Am I hearing that right?
Yeah, and I think all, you know, buy-side lawyers are going to want to see every contract. That's what they're going to ask for. But, you know, sometimes that's not practical, depending on the size of your business or the type of customer you service. You might have thousands of contracts that will be very challenging to try to collate and go through and attach.
and some that frankly are just not all that important. If they're small and they were from, you know, they're not active and they were from 2 years ago, you know, they're probably not material 2 years ago or older. If they're larger and they certainly represent active contracts, we've certainly seen projects where it's only active contracts or it's all active contracts over a certain size, or in some cases it's all contracts back 5 years, right? So just, it depends, and you need to negotiate what constitutes materiality.
Okay. And so, and would you mention this, is the buyer responsible? Do they put a, essentially a blanket statement asking for, I would like a, you know, a, I would like to know all technology issues or any financial liabilities? But how does a buyer request schedules?
Yes, yeah, so some of those, yep, it's a disclosure schedule document, and it will ask about those types of things. And you either have to disclose that there is or there isn't this type of issue, or there is or isn't this type of contract. And if there is a contract that fits into the provision of the disclosure schedules, you have to provide a copy of it. And lawyers that are doing their job are going to be looking at those contracts to make sure that there isn't any restrictions on the transaction. For example, I alluded to this notice period or this notice item earlier. You know, notice is kind of a big deal, and need to make sure that, you know, if notice or consent in some cases is required, that those consents come. Now, oftentimes it's a little tricky because you don't want to go to your biggest customers that might require consent, notify them you're selling the business before the transaction's done. So there's usually, an opportunity to say, we'll get those consents, either, you know, right near close, like right before, a day or two or a week before close, or right after. It just depends on the buyer's preference.
And then to even dig in this a little bit more, so is the buyer using a perhaps like a reconciliation sheet of contracts or customer names to pair that up with a contract? Just trying to get the example, or I'm just trying to wonder, how does a buyer know what they don't know? We'll start with that. I've got a follow-up question as well.
Yeah, as you work through due diligence as a buyer, you're going to get a list of customers or key customers, and you're going to reconcile it against that. We're also going to ask for, you know, those that require notice or consent. You know, you're going to want to understand the nature of the revenue as you're doing your financial analysis. You know, what customers represent what percentage of the revenue. And, you know, what's the history been for that customer so that you can understand the quality of the cash flow. So, you know, it comes out of an early stage in due diligence or earlier stage in due diligence, and certainly is something that your lawyers will be doing to help you, you know, match up those agreements to make sure they're in good standing. And to make sure that they're, you know, in a position or spot that they can be acquired.
Okay. And then this sounds like a major component. You mentioned months. It could take months of doing this. So who typically is responsible for pulling the data needed for those disclosures?
Well, it is a seller. Oftentimes is someone who's in an administrative function at the seller. Could be the owner, you know, could be someone who's responsible, who doesn't want to disclose to their team that they're in the middle of a transaction. But I would tell you in most situations, an administrative role, sometimes it's a CFO, sometimes it's a administrator, is brought into the inner circle, if you will, on the fact that the business is being sold and that these items are needed for diligence. Certainly begin to talk to their lawyers. Their lawyers will be interfacing with the buyer's lawyers to make sure that the request and the disclosure schedules, one, is appropriate, and two, that it's accurate. They will work closely with a seller to make sure it's accurate, because what you don't want is have a breach in your disclosure schedules through a mistake made
on AKA you didn't disclose something that you should have disclosed. Incredibly important that even if it's bad news, or even if it's perceived bad news, like litigation or some other, you know, material impact on the business, that it is disclosed. And your lawyers will advise you as a seller that you're better off over-disclosing than under-disclosing or keeping things from the buyer, because frankly, if you disclose those, if you certify and attest that those disclosures are complete and accurate to the best of your knowledge, or maybe just that they're complete and accurate, and they're not, and the buyer finds out about it later, you know, that could be grounds for a, you know, material lawsuit, because you, you know, misrepresented your disclosures. Now, what everybody's afraid of is that you might misrepresent your disclosures by accident or by omission. And that's where your lawyer can help you with validating that it is complete and accurate to the best of your knowledge as you make the disclosures.
Hey, Ryan, I want to go back to this 3 months. Now, Mike, it can't really take 3 months to pull all of the information. But what I'm hearing is that you need to get ahead of this. I mean, you really need to be prepared. You need to prepare with understanding who's got the applicable information and whether or not they're in the inner circle or not. And if those individuals who have the applicable information are not in the inner circle, how do you bring them in so as not to risk your ongoing operation? You need to get ahead of it with the buyers and buyers counsel to get an understanding of, you know, the level of information that they're going to look for. Start pre-negotiating on things like contract value, right? So that you're not going to every nit and nat of minutia that isn't going to be material. And so it sounds like that preparation process is really that 3 months and not necessarily the actual compiling of all the information. Is that right, or am I off on that?
No, that's absolutely true. I think just putting the information together can take weeks, not months, of course. But being prepared, I think it probably opens up a better question, right? What, you know, you want to make sure your records are digitized. You want to make sure that you have access to them. You want to make sure they're complete. You want to make sure that you have complete knowledge of kind of what's going on in the business, particularly if you're, as an owner, kind of worked your way out of a job, right? You have a general manager, let's say, that's managing the business, and now comes time for you to sell. Really, really important that you have your finger on the pulse of the business, and that its records are complete and clean and sanitized so that, you know, you're not going through an exercise of trying to digitize paper contracts, for example, or trying to go through a big lift as you're working through disclosure schedules. We have seen it in the most complex situations take maybe up to a month with records that are clean and complete. And some of that has to do with the negotiation associated with what's actually in the disclosures, like what is a material contract? What is a material vendor contract? Like, is that your landlord? Is that not your landlord? Is there a material contract with an advisor like Revenue Rocket? If there is, that needs to be disclosed, right? Typically, advisors are disclosed as part of disclosure schedules anyway, because they want to have no ambiguity for as to who's paying the bill, right? So that's an important thing. Certainly, I mean, this plays into reps and warrants. I know we mentioned that we may cover this in a different podcast, but certainly we can touch on it here. You know, representations and warrants, again, come back to, what you're willing to represent in the business. And these are very closely integrated with disclosures. You know, the difference between a representation and a disclosure maybe very nuanced. Disclosures tend to be much more about things that a buyer needs to know about the business to run it moving forward. Representations and warrants have to do with you attesting to a fact about the business. So one of those might be that there's no lawsuits pending, right? That is a representation, or you're warranting that there is no lawsuit pending. You haven't been served regarding a lawsuit, or you don't know about a potential lawsuit. That's an important one in a rep and warrant. You may be having a dispute with a former employee or a client or a vendor. And if you don't disclose that that might be a pending lawsuit, you could be on the hook if it becomes a lawsuit post-close. So, you know, there's things in this whole representation and warranty bucket and disclosure schedule bucket that your lawyer can help you with and certainly help you make sense of. I wouldn't be afraid of it. It's certainly just something that happens with every project and every sale. You just need to have competent legal advice on how to sort of navigate those waters.
So, Mike, do you have any, Mike or Matt, really? We just worked through a few deals in which there was quite a bit of schedules included. And it seemed that if this is done right, it can help give the buyer confidence in what the seller has and how the business is run. In any deals that you've dealt with lately, you know, can you give any examples of how these schedules really actually helped get the deal done and signed and delivered?
Yeah, I mean, I would tell you that, you know, certainly, you know, the oftentimes, particularly the growing business, you know, the terms of the contracts may not have been looked at in detail until you're getting close to close, right? So it gives the buyer a lot of confidence when they begin to look at those contracts that they're buying, you know, a business that's healthy and prosperous. And so I think in many ways, you know, when you're disclosing things around contracts, there's kind of an aha moment that happens for a buyer that, you know, wow, you have a really sort of interesting, thriving, vibrant business that helps them feel good about the transaction. That sounds a little crazy. But I think, you know, there's certainly, that's an example of a disclosure, schedule that can really help grease the skids on a deal, that you're, you know, well put together from a record keeping perspective, that there are no surprises in the transaction, that all of these records are complete, and, you know, make sense. That certainly can help sort of facilitate the, kind of move things along and certainly help your side of the negotiation as you move towards close.
And the flip side, have you seen any deals that have struggled with disclosure schedules and, or maybe even the timing of schedules and, or perhaps underestimated the effort?
Well, certainly. Yeah, I mean, we've seen deals get in trouble with the disclosures, you know, because their contract, you know, if you're a seller and your contracts are a mess or you're missing a lot of contracts or you don't have complete record keeping, that can kill a deal. And I think it's important to know that, you know, a buyer is not going to take your word for it that, you know, everything's great if there's records that are missing. That's not going to work. Their lawyers are not going to be okay with that, especially if there's a contract missing that would be defined as material, or a vendor agreement that's missing that would be defined as material. You know, if they're a vendor of some sort to you, or your lease, for example, you don't have a copy of your lease, where you're leasing space, probably a problem, right? So I guess I would, you know, understand very clearly that the hygiene you use around corporate record keeping will make the whole
concept of developing schedules much easier and better, and certainly fortify your ability to get the deal done. If you have poor record-keeping hygiene, one, you shouldn't probably be running your business that way, but you should certainly be thinking long and hard about going to market, because the likelihood that a buyer is going to accept undue risk because you can't provide this, all of the material information in the disclosures, I mean, it's just they're not going to accept that risk. They're not going to accept taking your word for it that this is in place or that's in place or that there is no consents required or notices required having to do with some agreement. It has to be actually shown. And so making sure that all of that spade work has been done before you would ever consider going to market, I think is super important, and it will help you ensure that you get a deal done. It's not something people think about when they decide to sell or somebody approaches them to sell or buy their business. They don't think about the fact that maybe they haven't been the best at either their accounting rigor or their record-keeping rigor. But without that, it's going to be very, very difficult to get something transacted.
Hey, this really helps.
I was going to jump in, Ryan. Mike, what's the role of what role do we play as an advisor versus the role of the buyers and sellers attorneys in the process of executing the disclosure schedules?
Yeah, that's a great question, Matt. I think, you know, we try to bring some sanity to the discussion from the business perspective. And we have a discussion oftentimes about what is the risk associated with this disclosure, making it or not making it. And that, what is the practical risk, right, that there will be a problem if something goes sideways, if it's either disclosed or not disclosed. And lawyers look at it a little differently, in my experience. Lawyers look at making sure that whatever the requirement is in the purchase agreement for the disclosure schedule is complete. And that's different from looking at what is the actual risk of the way the disclosure schedule is written for compliance. And does it warrant a change in the way it's written? And I brought up this example before where I said, you know, materiality is always something that can be negotiated. You know, what is considered a material contract? Is it something that represents up to a certain percentage of the business from a revenue perspective or a profit perspective? And do you need to disclose every contract or not? And we oftentimes will help in those negotiations to determine what in the legal world is called a carve out. Right? We're carving out a certain number of contracts that are considered material. And that's considered adequate so that people don't get too hung up on all of the making sure they're checking all the boxes. And even though that might not be very attainable because it might include 4,000 or 5,000 contracts, for example. And so our role oftentimes is to kind of be the, I don't want to call it voice of reason, but someone that would come in and say, you know, from a business risk perspective, not a legal risk because that's lawyer's domain, but from a business risk perspective, what is it? What is the risk associated with either the buyer not having the disclosure, or the seller not making the disclosure or creating a carve out?
Yeah, that's great. So, you know, I thought because ultimately, I mean, it becomes a legal document, right? Or attached to the legal document. And so I think that while we can be the voice of reason and also lead in a sense, it's the lawyers that really, you know, have to execute. And, you know, I think in drawing that out, obviously, I mean, you know, having the right lawyer is something we talk about a lot who has the experience in this space and can facilitate as opposed to making it more burdensome to getting the deal done.
All right.
Yeah. So that's all the questions I had. Pass it over to you, Mike.
Yeah, great. So with that, we'll tie a ribbon on it. Next time, we'll continue to pick up the conversation with additional components of growth strategy opportunities and optimization strategies for your business, as well as M&A tips and tricks to help you understand the workflow for M&A and hopefully helping you, think about how to get those deals done. Thanks, and make it a great day.